Accession number 10746, rule 4.
This
Commander Barton, reel 4.
This shook up, unfortunately, the old injury, which meant I had to leave the boat, and I was now supposed to go back to general service. So this I did, and I was sent to Devonport Barracks. Being unfit for sea at the time, they sent me to the naval base at Cardiff.
What, can you put a date when you injured your spine for the second time?
Yes, I think.
Approximately.
This would be February 42. Now, I went to the naval base at Cardiff, and I was in charge of the guard there, being a gunnery rating, and although I was still at Coastal Force Coxon, I'd qualified in gunnery, so I took charge of the guard and the town patrol and that sort of thing. I used to officiate at naval funerals and all that type of thing, and teach them drill and funeral fighting drill. We buried several, quite a few sailors actually. One, a Fleet Air Arm pilot, I remember well. So I was determined to get back onto MTBs, and fortunately the Captain Bernard, always, as I was in charge of the guard, used to stop and speak every morning when he came aboard. I used to turn the guard out for him, and he always used to have a yarn. And actually, he'd been in convoy with when I was on Hardy. We'd brought him home, we'd headed the convoy, and he was the Commodore. And we were talking about it, and he said, why are you here? And he saw my badge. I said, well, I'm hoping to get back to motor torpedo boats. I said, I'm unfit for sea at the moment. Oh, he said, you want to go back? And he said, well, there's a funny thing. He said, the Rear Admiral Coastal Forces is Rear Admiral Kekowich. He said, it was a very great friend of mine. And he said, would you like me to have a word? I said, I'd be very obliged, sir. I said, I want to get back to the boats. So he arranged, it was completely and utterly wrong. It was against all rules and regulations, but he had a quiet yarn with his old classmate, Rear Admiral Kekowich. And the next thing was, they had an immediate draft ship to Portsmouth, back to motor torpedo boats. This was, of course, ridiculous. Anyway, I went back to Gosport, picked up a draft ship to Felixstowe, motor torpedo boat MTB 72. The 72 was a 60-foot boat, made actually for the Swedish Navy, Swedish or Norwegian Navy, one of the Norwegian Navy anyway. She had two beautiful Isotta Fraschini engines on board, very lightly armed, one gun turret, and two 18-inch torpedo tubes, but she was a beautiful seaboat to handle. And away I went. We joined up with the 4th MTB Flotilla at Felixstowe, and I operated from there until the February then of 43. And during this time, we had many brushes with various E-boat, R-boat and convoys and that sort of thing. But the thing that brought my gallop to a stop again very suddenly was the fact that it was quite amazing. A German blockade runner was making a way down the coast from Wilhelmshaven, making a way down to make the break out into the channel and then out into the Atlantic and away, which they found easier to do than going around the north. And we attacked the escort, and we had a battle. The first shells, one of the first shells, hit the starboard side of our bridge. I used to stand in the centre of the bridge. The starboard side sat the captain, who was a young sub-lieutenant RNBR. I remember he'd been married just 3 weeks. And a cannon shell hit the side of the bridge, and took his most of his head from it, from his body, and the base of the shell cut my throat open, and lay the actual base of the shell was lying on the artery. The jugular vein is right on the artery then. It hadn't penetrated because I had a life, the airman's type of Mae West on, and it was lying sort of half in and half out on my throat. I believe a 16th further, 1/16 inch further, and I would have been dead in 3 minutes, so the doctor told me afterwards. Anyway, the boat was stopped. I was lying on my side with this heavy weight on top of me, and sort of a this white floppy thing sitting on me, laying on my chest. I couldn't make out what it was, and I was looking at all these pretty lights flashing over the top, and I thought, that's a nice colour. They were green and orange, yellow and red, and when my mind cleared and my brain cleared, I realised that there were traces bouncing all over us, and we were under fire from several E-boats who were much more heavily armed than we were, and we were lying stopped in the middle of them. So I realised then that something had to be done, so I moved. I realised then it was the captain and this white floppy thing, and it was actually his brains were lying just on my throat and chest. So I ditched those over the side, dragged him off me. I was temporarily paralysed. Something lying on my motory nerve, so they tore me off in the right arm. I couldn't use my right arm, but managed to get him clear. Dragged him to the back of the bridge, rang down to start up, and drove the boat clear. We fought our way out with our turret that we had. Fought our way past these E-boats, and there was nothing I could do to carry out an attack. So we set a course. The lights and the compass were shot away, so I got one of the torpedo men to sit on top of the bridge there and shine the box light, which was a blue light, down onto the compass to guide us clear. When we got clear, we tied the boat up and laid the captain out in the back of the bridge, covered him over, and then went to look for the first lieutenant, but he decided not to come out of the bridge. He didn't like the look of things, so he stayed there. Anyway, I got the boat home to within probably 60 or 70 miles of the coast, and we were picked up by a motor launch then, who they shifted me onto a motor gunboat because I wasn't all that well at the time. And they put a coxswain on board to bring the boat home, and that was it. So we got the boat home, and I went into hospital and got put together again. I went on survivor's leave and then went back to the boats.
This takes us to mid-43, doesn't it?
Yes, and I went back to the boats. I went down to the boat paid off, and then I went down to the Dover boats, the motor torpedo boats. I did a couple of runs with the Norwegian flotilla as a temporary coxswain with the big motor launches, but then I went on to MTB 25, which was the MTB with the senior officer there, Lieutenant Commander Ward, RN, and he was the senior officer MTBs at Dover, so I became his senior officer's coxswain, and from then on until the following year, coming up to 44. We had a succession, quite a succession of excitements. We had quite a few brushes with E-boats, R-boats, destroyers, laid mines. It was just a normal motor torpedo boat work. And then we had a torpedo tube taken off, and we fitted dories, and then we started on commander work with Captain Porter. He was then Major Porteous, and a D Squadron, number 4 commando, and his opposite number was Captain Mike Burness, and as Pat and Mike, they used to operate together. We also did a number of raids with Commandant Philippe Kieffer, K-E-I-F-F-E-R, who was the French Marine commando, and we did raids with the Free French on the coast. and also with the special boating section of the SS Brigade, the 1st SS, 1st Special Service Brigade. So we had a long and varied campaign with those. We really it was very varied, very exciting, and we did motor gunboat work, we did commando raids. And the Christmas Eve 43, I remember we did one commando raid on the, I think it was in the Boulogne area, in the Boulogne Calais area, just going before Dunkirk. We did one raid there, and 24 and 25 we did raids together, but they lost their commandos, and I believe they were all shot on the beach, but we went looking for them the next night and never found them, but we got away with it. But anyway, we carried on then. We changed commanding officers, and Roland Pluggy then, P-L-U-G-G-E, Roland Pluggy, Captain Roland Pluggy, well, he's lieutenant then, took over as senior officer of the 5th MTBs. And then I carried on with him until we did D-Day, and we did all the usual things. We did torpedo runs, attacking various things, firing torpedoes. Normal. It was so varied, and you know, there's just one long sea time, it seems to be now. There's nothing of any real moment. We did the odd torpedoing and the lots of mine laying, and it was quite varied motor torpedo boat work then. Of course, we used to work with we had free French there as well, and then we had the Dutch. So we used to work in mixed groups, and it was quite exciting over the period.
How would a motor gunboat or motor torpedo boat set about attacking a German convoy off the continent?
Well, we used to have two methods of them. Generally speaking, we used to rely on very much on the afternoon reconnaissance for the RAF. Jim Crow, they called him, and they used to go over and see if there's anything loafing, anything making its way up channel, or making it head sort of port hopping, if there's anything liable to come up from Dieppe. And on one particular occasion, we had a notice of a ship coming up from Dieppe, and I think it was a smallish blockade runner they'd made it as far as that, and we used to go over and get right inshore of the we used to find a paver spot was Pointe aux Haubans. It was sort of halfway between Dieppe and Boulogne, and it was a very one of our favourite spots to attack. Pointe aux Haubans, H-A-U-T-B-A-N-C is Haubans, and I remember that. And we used to listen out with our hydrophones for the propellers coming up, and then this used to give us a warning because we weren't fitted with radar at the time. And wait until they got in position, and you had to be in a position of sort of 70 degrees in the bow to have any chance of hitting it, so that is 70 degrees off their course with your nose pointing towards the ship, which then you could turn, and as she came up there, it gave you a fair degree of accuracy. And when they were in position sort of 300 or 400 yards away, or closer than that if possible, fire tinfish, fire starboard, fire port, and then hope to get through the convoy or around the convoy or past the convoy and get the hell out of it.
Presumably you never really saw the effects of your torpedoes.
Well, someday you could. If you were foolish enough to hang about because they knew where you were then, you might see them. But on several occasions, on the one occasion, we were in position. And we were spotted, and we had to drive through the convoy. I had to take the boat through the convoy. The other boats were the other side, but we were senior officers, so we took the dodgy spot, and I actually had to drive through the convoy to get the other side. And I lost two of the engine room crew that night. They got hit and they were killed outright. But we got the boat home, and not a pleasant night. But it was one of those things. It was said it was normal motor torpedo boat work. But on another occasion, we went over to Dunkirk, and a tanker had run the blockade as far as Boulogne, and she was coming up from Boulogne past Calais, and making for the graveyard, they used to call it, because of the number of ships there, they called it the graveyard, and up and away, you see. And we got over there, and we were lying stopped outside the fairway, and we knew this. The ships were being plotted on the shore radar, and they were coming up past us, and they had these fairy Lysanders. The Lysanders were dropping flares, and fairy swordfish, the old converted swordfish, the albacores, were dropping flares, and they silhouetted the tanker, and we steamed in, and we put a tin fish into her and turned round, and there was a solid wallop, no flash. It just hit her right in the guts, so we'd set them for deep running because it was a tanker. And just a wonk. The sea just shook, and she wasn't there anymore. She went straight in, but we didn't see it. Because it was so dark, you couldn't see him with the amount of stuff that was being hurled at us. You couldn't tell each other from which anyway. But we got in torpedoed and turned around and came home, and they were firing at us, but they were firing at us over there. And they were dropping flares to confuse the enemy, the albacores. And they were only a swordfish with a sort of a hatch built on them, and we got away without a single hit, you know, without a single bullet striking us anywhere. And yet, another night, we had no luck at all with a torpedo, and I lost two of my crew. And this is the sort of thing that went on, you see. Mine laying, we were passing two E-boats passing down. We were laying mines in Dunkirk, and two E-boats passed on the outside going down there, never saw us. And we didn't breathe until they'd passed, because we had four great big mines lying on the upper deck there, which meant that we couldn't manoeuvre. I mean, we were short of speed. We saw two E-boats whistling down past at a rate of knots on the way from Dunkirk down to Boulogne for the night, and that was it. So we just stayed quiet and pretended we weren't there. But this was the sort of thing that went on. It was all close-range work. And another night we went over and we saw a Narvik-class destroyer coming up. She'd come up, and we went... With my memories of Narvik, I was determined we were going to get this, even to tow it home. And we got within about 500 yards of this ship. We fired our tin fish, and we had misfire on both tubes. One of the most bitter moments of my life. It's this huge, pale grey painted ship, two funnels, all same Narvik class, 2,000 tons, and whistling past us. 450 yards away, all in a perfect position, and a misfire on both torpedo tubes. And of course, you were travelling at about 22, 25 knots, so there was no way we could turn on, catch her, get ahead, and fire our tin fish again. I wanted to fire them, but the captain decided not to. But then, of course, the escort turned round and they chased us all the way back to Dover. And I could feel them breathing down the back of our necks, running, but. We were invariably outgunned. They were much bigger boats than ours. They were better boats than ours. They were, until we got the big C-class and D-class gunboats, 70-footers, and were you weren't backing a good thing there. We had twin Oerlikons at the end of the war, single Oerlikons sometimes, but generally speaking, we were underarmed compared to them.
And of course, the
oh yes, yes, and they were much better engine than we. Besides which, they used diesel; they didn't have the flash point that we did. You see, I mean, one spark. You take it on an MTB, in the bridge of an MTB. You were standing on the small arms ammunition. Either side of you, you had a ton of Amator in the warhead, and behind your backside, you had 3,000 gallons of 100 octane fuel. So you're. You didn't throw any cigarette ends around anywhere. It used to be quite exciting, but the class of people that you met and the service, it was rough. Yeah, I know it was rough. It was hard. It was sea time was long and monotonous, hard work. You know, we used to drive it get on the wheel when we left harbour, and I said, get off the wheel when we came in. You drove, and this was it. But they were the people that you met and the crews and the life on the boats, they were far superior to anything else, and that's why we liked it so much.
So, really, the E-boats were doing a similar kind of work off the British coast to what you were doing
exactly,
on the German coast.
Yes.
And if you met, it was just really by accident.
Well, invariably, when we had the new big C and D boats, they could go hunting them, which they did. And they were armed with multiple of them. They had power-operated 6-pounders forward and aft. They had a couple of sets of twin Oerlikons. They had multiple turrets of 0.5s. I mean, when they fired, they fired. And they beat the E-boats. But with the 70-footers, it was... you were not on a good thing. But at the end, before D-Day came, we were fitted up with a twin Oerlikon aft and a single Oerlikon forward. So we had 3 20mm. But the Germans had 37 and 40 millimeter cannons on them, you see, and twin Oerlikons as well. They were much better armed than we were. But the biggest asset they had was their speed, and the fact that they were diesel boats, not petrol. So there was not so much danger of fire.